And I'm joined in the studio here at 17 minutes after 8 o'clock tonight by Paul. Evening to you, Paul.
Good evening, Patrick.
It's lovely to have you here tonight.
That's good to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Your pleasure. And Annabelle, you're there as well. Hello, Annabelle.
Yes, I am. Good evening, Patrick.
That's it. And you've got a friend called Lucy Smith, is that right?
Yes, I do have a friend called Lucy Smith.
Yes, and she's there tonight following what's going on. Excellent. Good.
Yes.
Paul, so tell us what you actually do. What is your role in life, as it were?
Well, my role in life is to be a wife to Paula and a father to Ben, who's 16, and Annabelle, who's 12. I'm the team rector. It's my paid job of the Billericay and Little Birstead team ministry.
Right. Well, that sounds busy.
It is. I have four colleagues who work with me, five churches in town, one of which is Chapel of Ease, the original parish church, and although I take oversight of all the churches, I'm mainly responsible for Emmanuel Church in Linden Road.
Okay, now how would people recognise Emmanuel Church? Because it's a bit distinctive, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's a modern build which celebrates its 21st birthday in June this year.
Is that right?
It is. It has an unusual sort of spire on the top of the building. It's octagonal in shape. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those buildings, Patrick, you either like or you don't.
Yeah, I think that's true, isn't it? It divides people, that building, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, it's not a traditional building by any sense, but in terms of an auditorium, a place to worship, the intimacy that it offers, for a minister, it's superb. And there's no place to hide.
Yeah.
When some churches with pillars, people tend to want to keep out of the way.
Yeah, anybody who's never been in it, it's kind of like there's this big auditorium area, isn't it?
Is,
the worship area.
The acoustics are wonderful, the PA is superb, and it's a real privilege to be the minister there.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yes. Annabelle, do you like it as a like a church?
I love Emmanuel as a church. It's so big. But it's actually really massive, and it's really oddly shaped because there's different corners. Oh.
Yes, but it's really interesting though, isn't it? And I guess when they built that church, they did it from like a blank piece of paper, really, in terms of like what they were going to do.
I think they did, but the chap who was the team rector at the time, Peter Raston, had a specific design in mind. It was based on a Catherine wheel, I think, had some allegiance to St. Catherine's Monastery.
Oh, right.
In Israel, and so there was a particular sort of a story and theme behind the shape and the significance of that. So I know he had a great hand in the original plans for that.
Oh, that's very interesting. And up until that point, I suppose the main town centre church was the old church in the High Street.
Yes, St. Mary Magdalene, the church in the High Street, was the original parish church. And it became too small for a growing congregation. In the 1960s, Christ Church was built.
Right.
In Perry Street.
Yep.
And part of the congregation that lived that side of town were encouraged to worship there. And yet this church still began to grow. And certainly where it's situated in the High Street, there's no room to expand or to put an extension. And so the church was built on what was known as the Archer Hall, which was a church hall that had been used by the church for many, many years, land given to the church by Mrs. Archer. So Emmanuel Church was built at the end of the High Street on the old Archer Hall grounds.
Oh, that's nice as well, actually, to think that land that she'd have given some long time ago was actually then going to be continually used by the church.
Absolutely, and there's still many in the church and in Billericay who refer to the church hall as Archer Hall.
Well, why not?
Yeah. It has a long history in the community.
Yes, why not? And of course, the kind of building that it is, it's not just like a worship area with a church, is it? You've got kind of like halls and other bits and pieces as part of the complex.
We have quite a complex, great facilities there, meeting rooms, a large hall, as you say. We have a great foyer, which is glass doors, and lots of, even that is an area to meet, is quite a good area. We have a chapel at the back, of the church, or the front, depending which way you view it, which seats about 25-30 people. And during the week and on weekends, it's used by the diocese for diocesan synod. Lots of diocesan events take place there. We have concerts. Lots of community groups use the church, and it's a great facility for the Christian community, but also for the community at large.
Yeah, that's great. So if somebody turns up at Billericay on a Sunday morning, what time do they turn up?
Well, we have two services at Emmanuel on the Sunday morning. You have an 8:30 service, which is what you might class a traditional, either Book of Common Prayer, traditional worship. It's a said service. There's no singing, either morning prayer, communion. Lasts about 45 minutes.
Right.
And then at 10:30 we have what is our largest family service, which is a bit more contemporary. We have a worship band with guitar and drums, and that lasts for about 75 to 90 minutes.
Okay.
Whichever they would come to, I'm sure they would be guaranteed a very warm welcome.
Right.
And we'd be delighted to see anyone who would want to give us a try.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Annabelle, are you involved in this in any way?
Yes, on a Sunday morning at 10:30 we have our Sunday school groups, and I go off into the Trinity Tribe, which is for the old ones, starting from year 7.
Right.
And then below that there's Friends and Heroes, which is the primary school years, and they're really good. It really helps you find your ways and everything, so.
Right, well, that's
it.
Excellent. Well, there you are. You see, that's the vicar's daughter sort of like plugging it away well there. But yeah, but that's great if you really think it's really good and really helpful. Excellent. And quite a few people, is that right, coming along to church?
Yeah, we're very fortunate to see growth in church numbers, which is quite unusual, I guess. So they say, you know, when they say the church is in decline, we've not seen that. We've put a lot of energy and emphasis into young families, and with family time we have a bit like Messy Church, where families come together to do some craft, have some afternoon tea, have a God slot, learn something about a Bible story. We have Who Let the Dads Out, the Saturday morning group for dads and toddlers, and just try to create an atmosphere where people feel that they're welcome, where they can belong, where they're valued.
Sounds great.
And in a community where people commute, do a lot of travelling to work, we're trying to encourage families to come together, and what better place to come together than a church community?
Well, indeed, the obvious place really for them to come together. You know, I mean, we can't deny the fact that I guess that some churches, the numbers have declined, but on the other hand, in many churches, this general story that, oh, it's all in decline and nobody's coming and it's less than it used to be, is simply not the case.
It's not the case, and that's true not just for Emmanuel, but certainly for Christ Church, for St John, and for St Mary's. I think all of our churches have seen growth over the last few years, and when they say the church is in decline, I wonder where.
Yeah, indeed.
I'm sure there's some struggling, but we're blessed to have not be part of that.
Yeah, well, that's very good. That's very good. And what about like the Walk of Witness? Because last week we were talking about the Walk of Witness that there was in Brentwood,
mm-hmm.
And the fact that they reckon they had 700 people at the Walk of Witness at that, and certainly the one in Ingatestone, we had over 100, which was the highest number we'd ever seen at that. Someone else who was in the studio, actually, for another purpose, had been to the one in Chelmsford and had said that there were hundreds and hundreds of people at that. So what was your experience about that on Good Friday?
Well, I think there was about 400 or so from Billericay churches who took part in the Walk of Witness. I have to be honest and say that I didn't, because I broke a toe.
Right. Anything to get out of it.
Absolutely. So I wasn't able to walk from church to the house, never mind the Walk of Witness. But we start at the Methodist Church, we walk up the High Street.
Yeah.
It's a silent Walk of Witness, and we meet either at Emmanuel or at the Holy Redeemer Catholic Church for an active worship for churches together in Billericay. So probably about 400, I think.
Brilliant. Yeah,
took part.
Yeah, because we did promote that on here. I certainly talked about that on air, both on the Friday night and also in the morning as an interview about all the things that were happening locally that people could be involved with. And there seems to have been a general increase in the numbers of people at the Walks of Witness. Why would you think that would be the case?
I think increasingly church members want to identify themselves with being Christian.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that the media and the newspapers weren't referring to Good Friday as Good Friday.
No, absolutely.
It was known as Bank Holiday Friday.
That's right.
I think as, and we, it's often said that Christianity is becoming more marginalised in this country, and that may be true through government, through society or whatever. I'm sure that's not true in local communities.
No.
I think the church is vibrant. But I think as a response to that, I think church members are saying, actually, we want to be seen, we want to identify ourselves with the Christian church and not be ashamed of who we are.
Yeah.
And I know some people would say a walk of witness is a walk of shame. Well, actually, what Jesus did on our behalf was a walk of shame.
Yes.
There's a sense of aligning ourselves with what Jesus did.
Absolutely.
On that Good Friday as well.
And showing people for whom it might just be Easter holiday Friday or whatever else they were going to call it, that actually it's a holiday, if it is a holiday, because there is a real religious significance behind it, and people want to acknowledge that.
Absolutely, and one of the things that we did in Billericay was to give out hot cross buns.
Oh, lovely!
To people in cars as they were waiting for the walk for the
really
the
just walk up to the cars and just give them a hot cross bun.
And people on the streets as well, we give them a leaflet and explain who we were, giving the hot cross bun, and I think people were delighted to be blessed in that way. And I think that's something we, as church leaders, want to be thinking about expanding, perhaps.
Yes,
doing it differently next year, and rather than people say, what's all this about, but to engage with some conversation and explain a bit more about why we're there,
but
and what
good.
The significance of that is.
It's good, and I think it's actually important, isn't it, that actually people of faith are prepared to stand up to show that they're people of faith and show why the faith matters, and doing that publicly is an important thing to do.
I think it is, and I think it's about being a disciple of Jesus. I think we are called to stand out, to be different, to be distinctly different. Been a lot of talk about that in the diocese recently, hasn't there, with Bishop Stephen's initiative of transforming presence, about being distinctively different, and we can do that in how we live, what we say, our actions, but also about our presence as well. And I think that's very important.
Absolutely, very important indeed. Brilliant, thank you very much for that. Cheers, Paul. That's very good. Now, Paul, you've chosen some music for us tonight as well, and the first track you've chosen is Deacon Blue.
So it is, yes.
Can you tell us why we have a Deacon Blue track?
Well, I hope there's some Deacon Blue fans out there.
Yeah, I'm sure there are.
It's a song called Dignity, but the reason I've chosen this, it's the first CD I ever bought in the mid to late 1980s.
Okay.
And I always remember the first single, the first 45 I bought.
Right.
When I was about 9 or 10 was a song called Snowbird by Anne Murray, which...
Oh, yes, I know that.
Oh, well, yes. I know you should have bought that. And but Deacon Blue, I've seen them about 9 or 10 times live. They're just a great band.
Okay.
But this is a... Pardon?
We went to go and see them as well.
We saw them at Liverpool.
And you went to see them, did you?
Yes.
And were they good?
Very good.
Very good. And the fact that they're getting on a bit, that didn't matter.
No, not at all.
Excellent. That's good.
I think sometimes the older bands are, the more confidence they have about who they are without trying to please.
Well, there's no doubt about that with everything in life, isn't there?
It comes with age, as you and I well know.
Absolutely. Yeah, brilliant. Good. Okay, then, let's have a listen to this track by Deacon Blue. And now, Paul, and if you've just joined us, Paul is the team rector in Billericay, and delighted to have him with us tonight. Paul, that accent's a bit of a giveaway that you're not an Essex boy, really.
No, I'm not an Essex boy. My hometown is Sunderland.
Okay.
Some people...
Never mind.
Well, somebody's got to come from there. Some people would say I'm a post Geordie, because although I have my twang, I don't use what you call colloquial language, which is canny and gizzer and bear. That sort of thing. So I'm fairly rounded, I think.
Okay. You never used that as a child, or those particular Geordie words? They were never part of your upbringing?
Oh, they were. What I'm saying is, since I moved away, I've become a much more refined.
I see. So hang on. So Essex has refined you, Paul. Is that right?
Well, I've lived around the country. I've lived in the northwest, on the Wirral, and Cheshire, East London, North London, West London.
Okay.
And in Essex. So I think over the years, you have to adapt so that people can understand you.
Yes, it's helpful, really, isn't it?
Talk slower than perhaps I would if I was back home.
Right, okay.
And yeah, so I don't use as much slang as I would have done had I still been there.
Okay, jolly good, jolly good. Okay, so how does a boy from Sunderland end up through all that those different places to being in Essex doing what you're doing now?
Well, it's one of those stories that you couldn't write, really, but it's a true story. I mean, I was brought up in Sunderland. I went to an independent Methodist church when I was younger. A lot of my friends went there. It was a big Sunday school, great youth group. And so my formative years were spent in independent Methodism. I left school when I was 16. My father was a disabled minor. I needed to earn some money.
Right.
Yeah, bring some money to the house. So I left school at 16 on the Friday. I started work on the Tuesday. Monday was a bank holiday. And I started working in the building trade. And that's what a lot of young men do in the Northeast. What do you do in an evening? You spend a lot of time sinking lots of alcohol and getting up to no good. But when I was 20, one of my best friends committed suicide.
Right.
And it's one of those events that have a real impact on your life.
Yeah.
And I think it can do one or two things. It can make you very angry about God. If there is a God, why do these things happen?
Absolutely.
Or it can cause you to ask some questions about how can I find out about what happens after death. And so although I had a background in Christianity, for some reason I used to think it was quite impotent. So I investigated lots of different world religions.
Right.
And there was a surprising how many different faiths there were, even in Sunderland 25, 30 years ago.
What people actually expressing these faiths and actually...
Yeah, you could go to a place of worship and find out about a bit more. And so I did. And I came to the conclusion, really, that Jesus was mentioned in all major world religions as either a prophet, a good man, a good moral teacher, a son of God. And came full circle. The only faith that gives Jesus preeminence is the Christian faith.
Okay.
And so I was, you know, really searching for answers. And it's a cliche, I know, but I remember just sitting on the edge of my bed at 4 o'clock in the morning, crying my eyes out, and just saying, God, if you're there, do something with my life. And I remembered a verse that I learned in Sunday school, which was John's Gospel, chapter 10, verse 10, that says, Jesus and I come that you might have life and have it to the full.
Absolutely.
And I remember thinking, I'm not living life to the full, I need something more. And it was amazing. I felt clean, I felt new. I was drinking 12, 15 pints a night. I didn't drink for 7 years.
Right.
That's the urge to drink. And it was around this time that I, at the church that I attended, I ended up, I didn't go back to the independent Methodist church, I joined a house church. And we used to go into Durham Prison on a Sunday morning to take a service about once every 6 weeks and then take a follow-up Bible study.
Wow, that's a brave thing to have done.
It was, but, you know, I was passionate that God had touched my heart
yep.
and changed my life, and I've always wanted to share that.
Yep.
And I did that for about 3 or 4 years and began to think, does God want Christians in the prison service? I think God wants Christians in every area of society. So I joined the prison service as a Christian, wanting to make a difference because of my faith in terms of rehabilitation and really just connecting with some of the guys who were there. So I joined the prison service, became a prison officer. I started at Durham,
okay.
But I knew too many of the inmates. Sometimes they would move an inmate to another prison. But I knew too many, so they moved me to Wormwood Scrubs
right.
in West London. So I was there for 2 years, and then I got a transfer to Liverpool, and I was there for 6. But it was during this time I began to think that perhaps I was in the right environment, but in the wrong job.
Okay.
I felt my uniform was a hindrance to my ministry, because I feel Christians have ministries wherever you
yep.
work, as part of our lifestyle and who we are. So I began to think about prison chaplaincy. And I wasn't Anglican at the time. I had to join the Church of England. And I joined thinking that God was calling me to prison chaplaincy. And so I joined the Church of England, was selected and trained for ordination. And I served my curacy. And we were living on the Wirral at the time, in the Chester Diocese. So I served my curacy, in Cheshire, a place called Hanforth in Wilmslow. I was there for 4 years. A curate is sort of a trainee post for clergy in the Church of England. And then when my 4 years was up, I came to Chelmsford. I had 7 years as the vicar in Chadwell Heath in East London. Had a great time there. Loved the diversity and ethnicity. And then it was suggested a number of years ago that I apply for the post here in Billericay as team rector, which I did, and I arrived here in 2008, so I'm coming up to 5 years here. So that's a very quick summary of about 20-year process, really, in terms of what's happening in my life.
But I always think, though, it's fascinating. I don't know, you probably didn't hear maybe when you were coming in, but I was chatting to Ches, who was on before, about what we were going to be doing tonight, and he said people always are interested in seeing what's going on behind the scenes and finding out how people and things end up to be the way that they are. And I think it's fascinating for people actually to always hear a Christian journey and find out how God has used people in order to them to be where they're at now.
Absolutely, and I wouldn't change what I've experienced over the years. I had 10 years in the building trade in sales and management, 8 years in the prison service, as I mentioned, and I learned an awful lot of skills, managing budgets and managing difficult people. But I think ultimately I learned a huge amount about myself.
Yeah.
I have confidence in who I am, and I would hope that some of the sort of the background that I've had had been helpful to the churches where I've served, and perhaps enabled me to connect with members of church and community because of that experience, who ordinarily perhaps wouldn't have even given the church a second thought.
I'm sure that is the case. Are you still in touch with any of these people back there in Sunderland who you lived a more disreputable lifestyle with when you were younger? And what do they think of what you do now, if you are?
I don't keep in touch with them. I've been away 26 years.
Yeah, unfair question, really. But
I think they would be quite surprised. My family.
What do they think of it?
Surprising. I mean, I don't come from a Christian family.
No.
I think initially they were quite surprised that I felt a sense of vocation. I hope proud of what I do. And in fact, we've just been up there this week just to catch up with my parents and my sister after. Because we've been on holiday just for after Easter, so you know we don't go back as often as we would like to, but
okay,
still have fond memories of living up, growing up there.
I'm sure you do, and that's probably why you've brought a bit of Geordie music with you tonight as well, from Jimmy Nail.
It is, yes. I mean, I think a lot of people came across Jimmy Nail at some point when he was doing his cowboy country cowboy sort of series on the TV. This is a song called Big River. It's written about the time.
Ah, is that what it's about? Yeah.
Which is Newcastle, but yeah. But I'm a Wearsider,
okay.
A Mackham from Sunderland.
A what?
A Mackham.
Well, there's a new word for us.
Well, it's a derogative term for people from Sunderland. I don't quite know the origin.
Probably best not to go there.
Absolutely.
I'd have said.
But he talks about the river, about the shipyards, about the coal mines, and how it was a big river, but how those industries are no longer there. So it's a song that, I suppose, sentimentally has a soft spot in my heart, but it's a great tune, and I think he had a top 10 hit with it as well
a few
years ago.
Great, good. Well, let's have a listen to it.
Thank you.
Patrick Sherring on Phoenix FM for Brentwood and Billericay.
If you've just joined us, it's lovely to have your company with us tonight. Thanks for choosing Phoenix FM. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by Paul and Annabelle, both from Billericay, where Paul is the team rector. And we just had some Jimmy Nail there because that's from like the northeast. And we were just talking off air earlier on about Margaret Thatcher in the northeast, really, and things in that sort of things in Sunderland. And you said your father was involved with mining, is that right?
Yeah, my father was a miner from being 14 years of age till he was disabled in his late 40s.
Right.
Due to a mining accident, so he spent his whole life there, and his father and father and father.
Yeah, because communities did that, didn't they? And it was kind of like the natural thing almost for people to do.
Well, it was. If your father was a miner, you'd be a miner. If your father was a shipbuilder, you'd be a ship worker. Or if your father was a white-collar worker, you would follow that.
So would you have expected to have been a miner when you were growing up?
Well, certainly the expectation was. But, of course, there was a mining colliery in the village that I was brought up in. in, but that closed in about 1972, and sort of the workforce dispersed around the coal field. But I'd always, having saw the conditions that they worked under, the amount of injuries that had been caused to men, I made a decision quite early on in my life that I wouldn't be a miner. So I think I broke the tradition. Going back hundreds of, certainly several generations of not following my father down the pit.
Not surprising though, really, that you would make that decision, because it was obviously a terribly difficult life for people.
It was, I mean, they worked hard, the injuries were difficult, and it was, you know, a very painful community sometimes to live in, you know, when the accidents had occurred. And I mean, the many stories in the Durham coal fields of whole families and community of men dying if there's been an accident or an explosion down the pit. So historically there's been a lot of damage to communities because of the type of work that they were undertaking.
And so what happens up there now? Because I guess the minefields are not there now, are they?
Well, no, the coal, there's one or two sort of in North Yorkshire and in Northumberland are still working mines. Shipyards were on the Tyne and the Weir, and as that song suggested, they're not there anymore. It's difficult. I mean, a lot of sort of high-tech computer technological industries have grown up. A lot of people have moved away, as I did, looking for work. I remember Norman Tebbit saying, get on your bike and find work, which a number of people have done. And I guess there's still quite a lot of, you know, high unemployment in a lot of those areas. And I think what's taken away, we were talking earlier about community, about church, and I think what has been taken away from places like Sunderland and is a sense of community where people lived and they worked and they worshipped together. Community nowadays is very dispersed, aren't there? People move away either to university or to go to work, never return. So I think the heart sometimes has been taken out of communities as well in recent times.
The very tightness is gone, and of course that's where we would think, I guess, that churches could help provide something that can bring people together.
Absolutely, and I've recently just been studying for an MA in leadership, and for my dissertation I looked at the neighbourhood, community and faith, and how faith can be at the centre of community and how faith can draw neighbourhoods together. And did some research in Billericay of how people view the church as a place of as a presence in community, the value they placed on that. But very interesting, I came across some research by Professor Kerry Cooper, who was the Chancellor at UMIST, Manchester University, and he put some research together a few years ago asking the question, where can community be found? And looking at the health club or at the pub or at the gym. And what he was suggesting is that community, or true community, consists of from the ages from the cradle to the grave, whether you're professional, working class, employed, unemployed. And he's suggesting if you go to the gym or you go to a hobby group, it's a very narrow, like-minded group. And he was suggesting that church, at its best, is the place where true community can be found. Now, he's an atheist, he's not a Christian, but his research suggested that actually true community can be found in church. And sometimes I think as churches we don't realise what we have to offer the community, which is probably why churches are growing, because people feel a sense of identity, a sense of belonging. And I think when people have moved, you know, lots of people live apart from their families and where they were born and grew up, and it's a place of being able to find a sense of belonging and people who will care for them and look for them. So I think absolutely the church can offer a place of community in the community in quite a unique way.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for that, Paul. Brilliant. Okay, we're rapidly approaching the time for the news. Can you tell us a little bit about why we're going to listen to it, just a little bit actually, of Guy Totora.
Yes, it's a guy. I go to the Blues Club in Billericay, the new Crawdaddy. I've seen this guy a few times. This is one of my favourite songs. It's called When Cotton Was King.